Today is Wednesday, December 23, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, France relaxes a two-day blockade on Britain over a new coronavirus variant.
The announcement by the French Secretary of State for European Affairs that sea, air, and rail services between France and the United Kingdom would be reopened came as a welcome relief.
Also ahead, Nigerians ignore a government COVID-19 travel advisory.
The prospect or the end result is frightening because whenever there's large gathering, there is a high likelihood of spread.
Plus, U.S. President Donald Trump has pardoned 15 people. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in France, and freight and passengers with negative COVID-19 tests from Britain have begun arriving on French shores after France relaxed the two-day blockade of the UK over a new virus variant. The blockade had isolated Britain, stranded thousands of drivers, and raised fears of shortages. Journalist Catherine Field is in Paris and reports.
The announcement by the French Secretary of State for European Affairs that sea, air, and rail services between France and the United Kingdom would be reopened came as a welcome relief. For 48 hours, there had been frantic discussions between officials in Paris and London on how to ease the cordon sanitaire that had been imposed after the discovery of a highly infectious strain of the coronavirus in southeast England. French nationals hoping to make it home for the holidays were stranded in the UK, while thousands of trucks, many loaded with produce destined for French wholesale markets, were parked on the side of motorways and on a disused airstrip nearby the busy port of Dover. So within hours of the agreement, passengers disembarked from the first ferry to arrive in the French port of Calais. But it isn't that simple. Only French nationals returning home or EU nationals resident in France and those on essential business can enter France, and only if they have proof of a negative COVID test taken less than 72 hours before departure. Getting those COVID tests to the thousands of lorry drivers is proving difficult, and it could take days to clear the backlog. On the French side of the channel, there are no similar queues, even though there was no France to UK ban in place. Many lorry drivers returned to their European base on Sunday evening. They said they were unsure if they would be able to exit the UK if they did make the journey across. European Union officials have called on the 27 member states to ease the ban on the transportation of goods between the UK and the continent. But so far, only France has come up with an easing of the restrictions. In all, some 50 countries have closed their borders to the UK, and many of those restrictions look set to remain in place until after the new year. Catherine Field for VOA News, Paris.
Australia's most populous state on Wednesday relaxed coronavirus restrictions for Christmas following a second straight day of low case numbers. Parts of Sydney's northern seaside suburbs remain under lockdown. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
Merry Christmas. Australia's government announced Wednesday that its most populous state will have eased coronavirus restrictions on Christmas, while Sydney's northern suburbs will remain on lockdown. This announcement came as New South Wales reported a second straight day of low case numbers, an indication that social distancing and mass testing measures are containing Australia's latest outbreak in Sydney. State Premier Gladys Berejiklian said restrictions will be back in place after the holiday.
Can I be very clear that whatever we have in place today goes back on the 27th, and in between they're very modest tweaks and modest changes to account for the fact that everybody has had a very difficult year.
Over the weekend, almost a quarter of a million Sydney residents were told not to leave their homes for 5 days unless for groceries or emergencies. Meanwhile, authorities rushed to contain an outbreak of almost 100 cases. With restrictions eased, Greater Sydney residents may host 10 people in their home, The exception being northern suburbs, where residents are allowed up to five on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and Boxing Day, so long as they're from the area. Australia has reported more than 28,000 coronavirus cases and 900 deaths since the global health crisis began.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. Nigerians are ignoring a government advisory against travel between cities and holding large gatherings as the country confronts a second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. The government has ruled out a second lockdown, sparking alarm within the health community of further spread of the virus to rural areas. For more, I spoke with Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine in Washington, D.C.
The prospect or the end result is frightening because whenever there's large gathering, there is a high likelihood of spread. Then nobody can guarantee how each individual person who is exposed to the virus will handle the virus. Yes, there's a significant percentage of people survive it, but there's a significant percentage also, significant minority, that have very, very bad outcome, including death. Like you already know, in the United States, more than 300,000 people are already dead. And the problem we have in developing areas of the world is that not all deaths are registered or counted, and some of them occur in villages. And then with the maybe possible stigma attached to somebody dying from COVID, the relatives may not want to report it. So these deaths are going to be undercounted. And that might give us a false sense of, you know, protection that, oh, is not common in Nigeria or in any of these African countries.
Does Nigeria have the capacity to deal with what people are now calling a possible super spreader?
Given our history, we do have the capacity, considering that we have in the past controlled the spread of Ebola, from time to have flare-ups of Lassa fever and all that. And the public health officials, we must give them kudos for what they have done in the past and continue to do. Unfortunately, this pandemic is not ending, and we're hearing of new variants of the virus. So we must continue to double our efforts. And part of it is really, really engaging the people. And yes, you're right that it could become a super spreader event in Nigeria if people stay gathered together in churches like nothing has happened, singing, because when you're singing in an enclosed space, you're likely to be generating a lot more virus into the space, and other people are breathing to the same space. So that is, to my mind, I feel a little frightened about that. I think we should do all we can to advise people that this is not a good course of action. And maybe as the Christmas church ceremonies come, are likely to be with us shortly, these events can be held outside, not inside enclosures. And in some cases, there may be television screens to put people apart so they can see the service, the church services occurring from a center, but from a distance, and also decrease their risk of exposure.
Are there any medical reasons why the Nigerian government has asked junior workers to stay home while the senior workers would continue to work in the office, but leaving open schools, restaurants, and other areas of the economy, including opening the borders?
Yeah, there should be some restriction at the border. If you're going to keep the border open, there must be some way of screening people. No longer just temperatures are no use. So either we say we must have some kind of COVID testing at the border with rapid results. Sometimes now people are now developing all these rapid tests. So if that is happening at the border, kudos. But if it's not happening and you just let people in and out, that is a recipe for disaster. I'm hoping and praying that that is accompanied by some testing.
That's Dr. Anthony Ibe, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Howard University and Georgetown School of Medicine. He spoke with me from Washington, D.C. It's been a bumper year for one second-hand kitchen seller in Japan. Tempo's Busters has bought double the amount of old equipment after the global health crisis forced many restaurants to close. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
A warehouse piled high with kitchenware near Tokyo is a graveyard showing the toll the global health crisis took on the city's restaurants in 2020. Stacks of old sinks, fridges, pots, pans and chairs are all being refurbished and sold on by Tempest Busters, a second-hand kitchen supplier. For them, it has been a bumper year. Takehito Tuyama, the firm's sales director, says they've bought double the amount of goods.
In normal years, our warehouse doesn't get full or overflow with products. But because of the rising number of businesses or restaurants closing due to the coronavirus, our warehouse is overflowing.
Between February and mid-December this year, around 126 restaurants and bars have gone bust in Japan. One of those forced to close was the ramen noodle shop, Shirahachi, in Tokyo's business district. Yashira Haga, its owner, got $165 selling his old kitchenware to Tempest Busters.
I've been slowly cleaning the shop by myself every day. Now that my stuff is gone, the shop is bare and empty. It makes me sad.
Yashira's premises is small, so social distancing and profits proved incompatible. Combine that with people encouraged to work from home, and his business of 15 years became unfeasible.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Two bills approved by Congress awaiting President Donald Trump's signature would limit the powers of Michael Peck, the CEO of the Voice of America's parent agency, the U.S. Agency for Global Media. A COVID-19 relief bill approved late Monday and a previously approved National Defense Authorization Act includes changes that limits the powers of the USAGM and its CEO, Peck. The two bills could restrict Peck's actions between now and January 20, when Democratic President-elect Joe Biden takes office. Since taking charge of the USAGM in June, Peck has been criticized by lawmakers for firing the heads of three network divisions in his first week, attempting to withhold funds from the Open Technology Fund, which promotes internet freedom worldwide, and failure to renew visas for some foreign journalists who work in VOA's language services. USAGM said it was unable to immediately respond to VOA's queries. Thailand is experiencing a new infection cluster among migrant workers after keeping the coronavirus largely in check for most of the year. The surge of cases in a province near Bangkok threatens to undo months of the containment efforts. The prime minister went on television to stress the need for vigilance to counter the local outbreak, as well as resurgences in other countries. A Turkish court has convicted Can Dündar, a Turkish journalist now in Germany, on espionage and terror-related charges for a news report. The court in Istanbul on Wednesday found Dündar guilty of obtaining secret documents for espionage and aiding a terrorist organization. The court sentenced him to 27 and a half years in prison. Dündar, the former editor-in-chief of opposition newspaper Cumhuriyet, was on trial for a 2015 story accusing Turkish intelligence services of illegally sending weapons to Syria. Dündar fled to Germany in 2016 and was tried in absentia. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. President Trump has issued pardons to 15 people, including three former congressmen and some Republican allies. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Among those pardoned, former New York Congressman Chris Collins, who was snared in an insider trading investigation. California's Duncan Hunter, who used campaign funds for personal luxuries. And he commuted the sentence for Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, a conservative convicted of corruption in the misuse of charity funds. Four former Blackwater security contractors convicted in a 2007 massacre in Baghdad have been pardoned. And President Trump also issued a pardon for George Papadopoulos, his 2016 campaign advisor, who unwittingly triggered the Russia investigation, and attorney Alex Van Der Zwan, accused of lying. Last month, President Trump pardoned former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Trump's longtime friend Roger Stone, also implicated in the Russia probe. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Data from medical authorities show 2020 is on track to be the deadliest year in a decade for people crossing the harsh desert border between Mexico and the U.S. state of Arizona. 214 bodies have been found so far this year, up from 144 for all of 2019. That's according to a database maintained by Pima County Medical Examiner's Office and the Humane Borders, a faith-based humanitarian organization in Tucson, Arizona. For more on what's behind the rise in deaths, VOA's Jason Pantekin reached out to Mike Krisch, who is the mapping coordinator for Humane Borders.
So far this year, we've passed up the number for all of 2013, which is 186. We're way past that now. And we're going to be close, probably over the number of 224, which is the number of deaths found in 2010. So 2010 was our all-time high, and it looks like we're going to surpass that this year. There's one location that's very hard to get to, the Growler Valley, west of Tucson, where I am right now. People have found so many bodies and skeletons out there, it's unbelievable, and it's still happening. There's about a 20-mile stretch of desert that people have to cross pretty far north of the Mexican border, and every time people go out there looking for bodies, they find them.
And looking at that particular valley, why, you know, if it is so dangerous, why do you think people are heading that way? Why not cross in a more hospitable area?
Because there are more people there, more border patrol. There are roads in the hospitable areas. They're heading for the roughest desert where there's not very good access and they have a chance of getting through, or at least that's what they think.
And so what do you think is behind this year's increase in deaths?
One, I think, is the weather. The weather has been brutally hot this year, and the usual rainy season never materialized. Another factor is I think there are more people trying to get across. They're trying more often than they were before if they fail the first time. That's a little complicated because the Border Patrol policy has changed unpredictably during this past year. They used to pretty regularly detain everybody that tried to cross the border without papers. Because of the COVID situation, they're now returning a lot of people to the other side of the border without doing much more than basic processing. So there have been large numbers of people accumulating along the border, and that was not happening earlier this year. So all these people are right there on the other side of the border. Whether there's a wall or not, some of them are going to come around and try again.
Yeah, and I want to ask about the wall, because that's quite surprising to that the numbers would increase even as the wall is being built. And of course, this wall is part of the Trump administration's, you know, maximum deterrence policy, which is basically saying we're going to make it as hard as possible for people to enter the U.S. so that the only people who come into the U.S. or try to come are what the administration might say is the legitimate asylum seekers who really need the safety of the U.S.
I don't think the wall is going to help much. I think most people who know about it would agree that it'll slow people down a little bit, but it's not going to keep people out. So I think it's a big waste of money. I think the money should be invested in people and not a wall. But it's really hard to say where things are going. How quickly and how drastically our policy is going to change with the new administration, we don't know. How quickly is the COVID situation going to be resolved? We hope in a few months, but we don't know.
What are some of the things that you think could be done to reduce the number of people dying in the desert?
I think our country needs to take a good hard look at what we're doing and try to come up with a more humane way to deal with it. The asylum process ought to be revived. The Trump administration has pretty much killed it. Migration is a big problem all over the world, and until things stabilize, it's still going to happen.
That's Mike Krisch, mapping coordinator for the Humane Borders Humanitarian Group in Tucson, Arizona, speaking with my colleague Jason Pantekin in Washington. A former finance minister in Somalia whose hotel was damaged in a bomb attack by the Islamist group Al-Shabaab says he is rebuilding and expanding, in a show of business confidence in a country where violence is a deadly challenge. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
The elite hotel on Mogadishu's beachfront is now an idyllic hangout. But as recently as August, it was victim to an attack by the Islamist group Al-Shabaab. A car bomb blew out the window and destroyed part of the perimeter wall. Attackers stormed the building, setting off grenades and shooting their way through rooms and staircases. But that didn't stop former minister Mohammed Abdullahi Noor from rebuilding and expanding.
I believe I am right to rebuild, even if another attack happens the following day. To stop rebuilding out of fear of what may happen in the future means to give up on business. I am determined to reinvest and reconstruct because it brings me satisfaction, job creation and benefits.
Al-Shabaab, which is allied with Al-Qaeda, has been fighting to topple the Somali government for more than 10 years. The militants have frequently targeted hotels, restaurants and cafes in Mogadishu, which are often filled by the political and security elite.
The main challenge for businesses in Mogadishu is security. Many hotels in Somalia, particularly in Mogadishu, do not work now for two reasons. Either they were bombed several times and gave up on rebuilding and so the business collapsed, or others are simply unable to make profits because the country is not peaceful.
Noor told Reuters he had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on reconstructing and repairing the hotel that cost him $2 million to build. Just a month after the attack, and customers were back in the five-story hotel, enjoying seafood and cappuccinos and taking in views of the ocean.
Thanks to Soraya Ali of Reuters for that report. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, our colleague, Jason Patinkin, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofoin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.
Spending more time at home during the COVID-19 pandemic, some of us may be indulging in foods that might be comforting, but at the same time aren't necessarily the healthiest either. Researchers at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, released a new study that suggests eating a meal high in saturated fats may thwart our ability to concentrate and focus on tasks at hand. The researchers compared the continuous performance test results of 51 women who ate a meal that was either high in saturated fats or one that was prepared with unsaturated fats. The test measures a person's continued attention, concentration, and reaction time over a 10-minute period. The scientists found those who ate the meal with higher saturated fats scored lower on their tests than the women who ate the one containing healthier fat content. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
In the news, moderator Michael Williams and a panel of Washington experts as they analyze the top news stories of the week, including U.S. Congress is set to act on a $900 billion COVID-19 relief package to businesses, individuals, and resources for vaccines. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.